Hi, this is Bruce Clark, the Seton historian. This week's lecture is about Cortez and the conquistadors. It fits into week 3, day 1. The great captain from Castile, Hernando Cortez, was born the son of a minor noble in 1485. Despite a rather sickly childhood, he was bundled off to the University of Salamanca to read grammar. He managed to succeed in that endeavor, but recurrent health problems forced him to give up his projected study of law, and he returned home. In 1502, he was offered a job on the staff of the West Indian governor, Nicolas de Ovando. However, a week before he was scheduled to sail, a carriage accident rendered him unfit for travel. 2 years later, finally recovered, Cortez decided once again to seek fame and fortune in the West Indies. Soon after his arrival in Espanola, or Hispaniola as we now know it, his substantial literacy and basic familiarities with the law secured for him a position as a notary in the village of Azul. One of the perks of his new position was ownership of a comitiva, or a feudal fiefdom, as well as a staff of Indian servants. So Cortez became a gentleman farmer, and in the next 7 years, his year-round exercise and the rich food of the islands turned him into a healthy outdoorsman. And his administrative capabilities drew the attention of his superiors for future leadership probabilities. In 1511, Governor Diego Colón decided to send an expedition to conquer Cuba under the command of Diego Velázquez. Cortés was named the expedition secretary. He soon discovered that Velázquez was a petty tyrant who was impossible to satisfy or to serve. Nevertheless, as a reward for his efficiency, Governor Colón appointed Cortés king's treasurer just before he left office. As fate would have it, the new governor was none other than the tyrannical Diego Velázquez. During the next few years, Cortés's difficulties with Velázquez intensified. Finally, in a last-ditch effort to get into the governor's good graces, Cortés married Catalina Suárez, the dowager sister-in-law of Velázquez, and was rewarded by an appointment as the alcalde, or the mayor, of Santiago. And then, in 1518, an appointment as the captain of a new expedition that would soon invade the mainland of Mexico and conquer the tribe of warlike Indians who inhabited the central region. Hernando Cordoba had heard about them during his exploration of the Yucatan Peninsula in early 1517, and Juan Grijalva, who had heard about them again while he explored the Mexican coastline several months later. Jealousy of Cortez's appointment and aware of past difficulties between Cortez and Velázquez, a group of greedy men confronted Velázquez and convinced him that Cortez was disloyal. The governor summoned Cortez to Havana, but since Cortez and many of the 600 men in his coterie had sunk their entire fortunes into the expedition, they were determined to go on. Cortez escaped arrest at Trinidad and again in San Cristobal. In February 1519, his small fleet of 11 ships set sail on a voyage to adventure and greatness they could never have anticipated. On Good Friday, the flotilla reached an inviting harbor and anchored. Cortez and Padre Olmedo, the expedition chaplain, went ashore and prayed for God's guidance, and christened their new base of operations La Villa Rica de la Veracruz, the rich city of the True Cross. Rumors concerning the presence of strange men soon reached the Aztec Emperor Montezuma II, who sent scouts to check on the invaders. When they returned and described the Spaniards, Montezuma was certain that the Chichel prophecy had come true, and hopes that he could pacify the risen Quetzalcoatl with gifts. A parade of messengers began arriving with a variety of golden objects. Since he was trying to persuade men who hoped to recover the investments they had made in the expedition rather than an avenging spirit risen from the grave, The richness of these bribes had the opposite effect from the one that Montezuma had hoped to achieve. The adventurers were more eager than ever to press on. Being the careful man that he was, Cortes did not rush headlong into the unknown. Instead, he spent the next few months winning over a majority of Velazquez's supporters in his band, men who resented his defiance of the governor. Learning as much as he could about the terrain along his proposed line of march, and making friends with Kempola and Tabascan Indian tribes that lived along the coast. From Father Olmedo's first convert, the Tabascan maiden, Doña Martina, Cortes learned that most of the tribes along his line of march hated and feared the powerful Aztecs, who raided villages to acquire human sacrifices for their bloodthirsty gods. In mid-August, Cortes was ready to move inland. He dispatched a ship with a message begging for the king's approval of the man he had chosen as the leader of Veracruz's cabildo, or government, then burned the other 10 ships. Friend and foe alike, the men of the expedition were ready to advance. Cortes had eliminated any hope of retreat that was being nurtured by some of the men. The first Indians Cortes's column encountered were the Tlaxcalan, one of the few tribes that had never been conquered. Cortes was hopeful he could win their trust and friendship, but they were, of course, suspicious of these shiny-skinned men in their armor, mounted upon swift beasts, and the likes of which they had never seen before. Cortes was forced to demonstrate the might of the conquistadors and the power of their weapons before the Tlaxcalans agreed to a truce. Ultimately, they did become staunch friends and loyal allies. Their aid and their support during the next months and years was instrumental in the final success that the Spaniards achieved. The first sizable Aztec village they reached was Cholula. Here, Montezuma arranged a gala reception and a distribution of many gifts. But there was treachery afoot. At the height of the party, armed warriors burst into the village and attacked Cortes and his men. However, they did not catch the alert Spaniards off guard. Most of the attackers were killed, and the rest were routed. To demonstrate that he would deal harshly with any further treachery, Cortes ordered the inhabitants of Cholula to be driven out, and then the village was burned to the ground. The next morning, the march continued, and later that week, on the western horizon, they got their first glimpse of the twin volcanoes that guarded the Aztec capital of Tenochtitlan, or Mexico City. The next day, they beheld the Aztec capital for the first time. Built on an island in Lake Texcoco, Tenochtitlan is described by the poet conquistador Bernal Diaz de Castillo as a lustrous jewel set on a sea of shimmering dark blue velvet. Since these invaders had refused to be sated by his gifts and had easily overcome the warriors that he had sent to surprise and kill them, once he viewed the weapons they carried and the beasts they rode, Montezuma was compelled to admit the conquistadors to the city and install them in one of his many palaces. To ensure the safety for himself, to avoid further trouble, and when Montezuma had refused to accept instruction from the priests, Cortes took Montezuma captive and kept him in the guest palace. Problems soon developed on a different quarter when Governor Velazquez sent an armed force led by Panfilo Narvaez to arrest the insubordinate Cortes. As soon as he learned of their arrival, Cortes rushed back to Veracruz, defeated Narvaez, took him into custody, and enlisted most of the former Narvaez supporters in his own ranks. Then the enlarged force marched back to Tenochtitlan, where they arrived in June 1520. But new trouble was brewing. Pedro de Alvarado, a man Cortes had left in charge during his absence, had infuriated the Aztecs by brutally breaking up one of their religious ceremonies. Several of the worshippers were killed, and many more were so badly injured that they didn't recover. Cortes and his men were able to gain access to their former living quarters, but were forced to live under a state of siege. Early on the evening of June 28, 1520, the Aztecs attacked. The attacks continued for the next 48 hours. During the hand-to-hand fighting, many Aztecs and several Spaniards perished. On one occasion, the feathered warriors fought their way all the way to a balcony directly below the one the conquistadors occupied. Cortez himself led the charge that turned them back. When he returned, 10 men that had fought beside him did not. On the evening of June 30th, 1520, Cortez held a meeting with his priests and high-ranking officers. "Friends," he said, holding a bloody rag against the gash in his forehead, "it is time to retreat. We are low on food, and the men are beginning to lose their resolve. We will form two phalanxes at midnight. I will command the first, and Lieutenant Narvaez the second. May God bless all of us and protect us." The first phalanx, a diamond-shaped formation ancient Spartans had perfected, that allowed each man to face toward the enemy assembled at midnight and move down to the large square that fronted the palace. Fierce fighting began at once as eager Aztec warriors rushed in from all sides, and fell upon the Spaniards. The other phalanx quickly moved into place, and together they fought their way out of the city. Bodies of Aztec warriors and Spanish conquistadors marked the route of the bloody battle. The king's ransom that they had acquired was discarded, and golden ingots were also strewn along the way. The night would forever be known as La Noche de Triste, a night of sadness that produced no thrill of victory in the hearts of the combatants. Only the sadness and agony of defeat. There were no victors to tally up when the battle ended. The count only included the survivors and the dead. It took nearly a year to rearm and refurbish a new expedition, but as soon as he could, Cortez led another band of conquistadors westward. In May 1521, they surrounded and besieged the Aztec capital. On August 13th, the new emperor, Cuauhtemoc, surrendered, and the hard-earned victory was won. It was the beginning of the end for the pagan gods that had ruled the devil's playground, and a true beginning for a country that, through the intercession of our Blessed Mother, soon would become a citadel for the Catholic faith. This is the Seton Historian, Bruce Clark, signing off for this week. Until I see you next week, have a great, great time. Enjoy history and always do your best. God bless you.